bed. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy.
Hello and welcome to this week's Robin Pod Weekly. Of course, it's great to have James Pellin on board for this week's episode. And don't forget, of course, the Robin Pod is powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by the players, club officials and supporters of Hull Kingston Rovers. James, how are you doing, mate?
No, I'm good, thanks, Chris. Are you?
Yeah, I'm delighted. And the reason why is, James, because Hull Kingston Rovers are in the Challenge Cup semi-finals. We've been here, done that before, but I tell you what, James, it still doesn't get boring, does it?
It doesn't, no. It's like third year on the trot. We've got to the Challenge Cup semi-final and you throw in a couple of grand playoff semi-finals. Yeah, it just does not get boring at all. You know, still the same excitement that we had, you know, when we got that, when we were in about a couple of years ago. So, yeah, bring it on. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at that quarter-final, James, because let's be honest, it wasn't a clear-cut victory, was it? And credit to the Lee Leopards. They really fronted up, didn't they? Especially in that first half. It was a real tough game for the Robins.
Yeah, it was. It had that feeling about it of being one of those days. Because, you know, I think we knew Lee had come with some strong efforts, etc. Because I think essentially that, you know, their season was on the line, really. You know, they've won one Super League game and, you know, the defending cup holders. So they wanted to obviously hold on to that as much as possible. But yeah, it just had that feeling of it's going to be one of those days. And it just seemed that whatever Lee did just came off. You know, they were playing well. It was something like 96% completion rate in that first half, which is just, you know, that's just unheard of. And, you know, they had, like, you know, Tom O'Mahon back, and he was just outstanding for them. You know, he just made yard after yard after yard. And, it's just, in a way, I think, you know, we're fortunate to be going in just 8-4 at half-time.
And, yeah. I mean, James, in that first half, I put out on social media that at half-time, Lee had done a number on us, because what they'd done is they restricted us, our ability to attack, didn't they?
Smothered us.
Yeah, and that was a plan. They'd executed their game plan to a T, and to be fair to Lee, they did it so well. And Rovers really did struggle to sort of get any field position, but like Willie Peters has already alluded to this season, stay in the game, and that's what the Robins did. Yeah. They didn't let Lee really get on the front foot in terms of the scoreline, and I suppose that's what Rovers fans need at the back of their mind, is that even when a team is sort of, I wouldn't say dominating us, but on the front foot, we've still got a bit more to come, and that is the Willie Peters way. But credit must go to Lee for how they performed in that first half, because they did really do a good job on the especially in Rovers in attack.
Yeah. I mean, we just seemed to struggle to get out of our own half. But I think the big concern that we were having was obviously we're playing with the wind in that first half. And we knew we were playing into the wind in the second half. And I think we'd seen, obviously, the last two home games, the actually, you know, impact that the wind, playing into that wind had. It just seemed to sort of knock Rovers out of kilter. But, yeah, I mean, that defensive effort from Lee in that first half, Rovers just could not make any ground. And yet Lee were making the yardage. And, yeah, you've got to give credit, ultimately, then got to give credit to Rovers' defence for holding out, really. You know, that one try that O'Donnell got in, bit of a sloppy on the right edge, but other than that, yeah, the defense was solid, which, you know, I think in years gone by, the Rovers of old would probably have crumbled, you know, with that amount of pressure coming onto them. But, you know, we've said it a number of times that this squad now is a completely different kettle of fish, and, you know, like you said, they hung in the game. And I think it's a mark of a quality team when you can, you know, things aren't going well, but you're still hanging in there, and then you can just, you know, you're still within touching distance, and that's what Rovers managed to do in that first half. But as I said, the concern was playing into that window that second half and just thinking now, you know, would Lachlan Lambie, he's basically booting the ball halfway down Preston Road.
Yeah, well, it's true, because neither team really managed to play the conditions. but I tell you what, that first half, that Joe Burgess try, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. The step and the turn of pace. I mean, don't get me wrong, Moylan in defence didn't exactly cover himself in glory, did he?
But he didn't. No.
The speed and the skill, I mean, that is why, you know, rugby league is, for me, that is one of the, why rugby league is so great is when you see trials like that, that is what you want to see.
Yeah, it was. And he's just, but he was, yeah, he was completely against run of the play. But I think once he'd made that break, you just thought he's going to score here. There's no way, you know, Moylan's going to get anywhere near it. And he didn't. He just absolutely skinned them. I don't know, you've sort of seen the, you know, watch the replays back and the one sort of looking down the field. And the look on Tom O'Mahon's face when Burgess broke through, he just knew that was it. You know, that he just knew they weren't going to stop him. And yeah, he did, you know, and I think that's what Burgess has been like that all his career. You know, he has been able to sort of create those, sort of get those sort of tries really out of nothing. And, you know, I think it's great that he's actually, you can see him getting better and better, you know, every week. And, you know, he's clearly enjoying himself at Rovers, you know. So I just hope, you know, there's talks going on behind the scenes to, you know, potentially extend his contract beyond the 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, on that, James, he's only on a 1 year contract. Obviously, he left Salford in, you know, circumstances were not fully aware of why he left, but they got rid of him. He came to the Robins. He looks like a player that, if I was another team in Super League and knowing that he's only on a 1 year contract, I'd be looking to say, well, actually come over to us. So for me, he'd be a player that I'd look to tie down because he's already scored more tries than he did for Salford in the whole of last season, in the few games that he's played for the Robins so far this season. And he does look like a top quality player, doesn't he? And Hicko and Burgess to complement each other so well.
Yeah. And I think one thing that we saw on Saturday, that's something that we probably didn't really expect from Burgess in his defensive qualities. I mean, that tackle he put on Charnley to put him, I think it was Charnley, wasn't it? To put him into touch. And, you know, we know how good Charnley is. And, you know, Burgess, you know, give him a sight of the touchline, but then just nailed him into touch. So, you know,
I think they seem to as well, James. I think they seem to enjoy the battle of
former teammates.
From the Wigan days, it seemed to be a little bit like, you know, see what you can do, see what I can do, and they seem to enjoy that little battle. And you're right, Burgess, his edge defence, it did really come to the fore, didn't it? Because there's a couple of times where he managed to get the players into touch. And he's a big boy as well, isn't he? Do you know what?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
From our naivety, until you see the players in flesh, but when you see him up close, and it was always the same with Sean Kennedy, I didn't realise how tall he was until I actually stood up next to him. And these boys, you know, Bez, he's a big boy, isn't he?
Yeah,
you know,
he is, yeah. So yeah.
He's definitely proved his worth so far. So for me, if I was Willie Peters, I'd be straight offering him a contract for the new season. Definitely. Like we said, James, that the first half, it didn't necessarily go the way of the Robins. I mean, we saw a few controversial decisions, didn't we? I mean, that forward pass. I mean, the Minchello one. I mean, also, don't forget as well, the offload, alleged offload from Frankie Holton, which we all thought was a try. I mean,
I've watched that about four or five times, and I still cannot see where a Rovers defender pulls the ball out. It's clear that Holton's got the ball in his left arm. He's trying to offload it. He drops it, and Whitbread falls on it. And the fact that the video ref couldn't sort of say who'd pulled it out, you know, and he wasn't really sure. You could tell he wasn't sure, and there was no, you know, grappling movements to pull the ball out of Holton's hand. He just clearly lost it trying to offload it.
Yeah, and what you'd say is, James, if that happened probably anywhere else on the field, it would probably resulted in a Rovers ball. The fact it happened over the try line, you know, obviously the scrutiny is far more intense. But for me, ultimately, Frankie Holton's got a responsibility.
Yeah, to hold on to the ball.
And yes, Elliot Minchella, I do think he made contact with the ball, But I don't think he made contact where he was sort of trying to promote it out of his hand or push it out.
No, it could have been just like a knocking, you know, in the action of the making the tackle and pushing it back over the line. But the moment of it coming out of his hand, there was all the Rovers players were on the other side of his body, though, on his right-hand side. And his left hand was out with the ball. And it just dropped.
Yeah. And of course, then we saw the no try from Dean Hadley, alleged forward pass. I mean, you know, I always try and give the benefit of the doubt to the match officials to say, well, through their view. But the more you look at it, the more you think, you know, and it looked like it was Kendall who gave the decision. Normally, it's like them decisions.
It's the touchdown is into it,
Line of sight. And it did look like it was Kendall who made the decision. And the only thing for me is, how can Kendall make that decision from his point of view, bearing in mind he's front on? It just seems I don't know.
It blew up fairly quickly. And like I say, again, the more times I've watched, I still cannot see how it just didn't look forward. And the annoying thing was, there was other instances where there was clearly passes that were, you know, very more borderline than that were just allowed to go. So, you know, and that's why I was saying at the beginning, it just felt as though it was going to be one of those afternoons. No matter what we did, things were just conspiring against us in that first half. And it just felt as though it was going to be one of those days again.
Yeah, do you know what, James? I think this is the shift in our mentality. Even though Rovers weren't that great in that first half and Lee got the lead, I never thought the result was in doubt. And I think it's this second season of Willie Peters where I just, I've got so much confidence in this Rovers side that they're going to still pick up the result. And as much as it's a sort of a mentality shift in terms of the players and their expectation, what we should expect them to do, I think the supporters as well, you know, our expectations should be a little bit greater as well, because there's no doubt that this Robin side have got far greater depth than any Robin side we've seen for a long time. And
absolutely.
You know, I remember people panicking about the derby when you know, that lot went a few scores and people thinking, oh, they might come back. Like, I just never felt it. Mm. And even then on Saturday, I didn't feel, even though Lee went in front at half time, that the result was in doubt. I don't know. Maybe we all need to maybe start believing a bit more in this side and think, actually, I don't know. We're getting
I know where you're coming from. You totally know where you're coming from. But I just think it's because we've had so many years of just seeing, you know, leading positions drift away and lose out that. It has become ingrained in us, and it is that, I think you're right, it's that sort of good, that next step from, you know, becoming, you know, a very good side to being a bloody, you know, excellent side. And I think that is that next step we need to do and be able to do it consistently. I think one of my concerns is this, you know, putting in that 80-minute performance. I think you look back over the whole season so far, there's probably only Huddersfield away where we've had that. You look from minute one to minute 80, we've totally dominated. There's been patches in other games, not necessarily where we've been under threat, but just not seem to be as, consistent in attack and, you know, sort of dropped off slightly. I mean, it's easy when you're playing, you know, the low teams at the bottom of the league, you know, at home, and you sort of put, you know, you're not going to lose. But the difference between, you know, the teams that, you know, are going to be grand final play regular contenders for the playoffs are the ones that just don't let the foot off the gas. And I think that's really where we need to be going and developing that, you know, being able to demonstrate it for 80 minutes.
I totally agree with you, James. And I do think this is and do you know what, halftime was a perfect example of that, where Willie Peters, you know, had a word with him. They went back to the game plan. So, obviously, we've heard it from a few times this season, haven't we, from Willie Peters, where the Warrington game where the team haven't executed the game plan Willie Peters has set out for them. This was another example where the players have sort of drifted away from what they'd all set out to do. Thankfully, for us on Saturday, they managed to rein it back in at half-time. Willie Peters got back in the rear and you know, managed to change it round. I think you're right. All I'd say is I think as well, James, that this is work in progress, isn't it?
It is, and it's fabulous
for me. Do you know what?
It's great to see. It's absolutely great to see, because you can see the potential that squad has got. And like you say, the depth we've got now is, you know, it's just phenomenal. You know, really, you know, Dean Haddie drops out the other week, and you got, you know, you bring in sort of Luckley straight back in, and came back in, and even the weekend you bring in someone like Tennyson in, even though they didn't get on. The fact that you're able to bring somebody like Tennyson on, you know, into the squad and have the confidence that he would be able to contribute is, you know, is a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair with that Tennyson one, it's gone a little bit under the radar, isn't it? Because I was so looking forward to seeing him out on the pitch, and the fact he didn't get on. I mean, to be fair, it's still a great experience for him in terms of being around.
Oh God, yeah,
and seeing, you know, being in the change rooms and I dare say if the scoreline was more flattering for the Robins, would have probably seen him. I couldn't understand what the Peter's thinking in that, you know, if he went onto the pitch, bearing in mind this was a Lee side who were playing really well, they could have potentially exposed him for his youthfulness and his lack of experience. So I understand why he didn't come on. But that half-time team talk from Willie Peters was so important, wasn't it? Because the second half Robins was so different from the first half.
And, it's totally different,
I don't know what you thought, James. I think Mikey Lewis was really important in that second half in terms of when we got penalties, he tapped it and ran. He was taking the ball from the hooker position. And he's making things happen for the Robins. Now, whether that's in making things happen with a pass of the ball or whether he's running start, he's making things happen, and he's a player who's really coming into his own at the moment.
It is, and you can sort of see that maturity. And I think, you know, I think Willie Peters was in the press office this week about, you know, the impact that just being part of that England setup at the end of last year has had on Mikey, and sort of seeing him actually maturing as a player. And I think, you know, we always knew he'd got it in it because we've obviously seen it, but agree, he has gone to a different level this year. I think, you know, the first half he was quiet, but then a lot of other players were quiet. But saying that second half, he said, right, I'm going to do something about this, and took the game by the scruff of the neck. And that, you know, just simple things like that, having the wherewithal rather than just getting that penalty and just booting it into touch and thinking, okay, we might make 10 yards, but at least it's in touch. But to actually just tap it and catch the lead defence on the back foot. And he made, was it 30, 40 yards just on that one thing. And suddenly the whole momentum of the attacking goes, and you know, Lear suddenly all scrambling back rather than having a penalty, you know, where the attack penalty after it's gone into touch where they can reset. You know, they're suddenly under a lot more pressure. And it, you know, it's just that thing, that little spark that, like I say, we know he's got, and he's just saying, I'm going to take this game by the scruff of the neck and do something about it.
Yeah, and we, I mean, as good as Michael Lewis has been, that's on the back of Tyrone May, giving him the platform to play his style of rugby. And we saw in the 48th minute, we saw Baird just go over for his second try after a Tyrone May pass to Pehiku. Hiku taps it on to Burgess, and Burgess finishes with a plum in the corner. I mean, fantastic.
I mean, again, that was just a class. Winger try, you know. Yeah. He still had a lot to do, but you know, the quality of the Burgess just, you know, he got it down. But it was just that build-up between May and Hiku that created that. And you know, I've had also some comments from people sort of saying, oh, he didn't really do much, but you know, that what he did there, he just set that in motion, and that the pass to Hiku was sublime, and then he just gave Hiku that space to then put Burgess in. Great Burgess, some more space to again go and score in the corner, and he took it really, really well.
Yeah, and James, I mean, next try was from Tanganoa, I think, what, six minutes later after that. I mean, Tanganoa, he's running some great lines. I don't want to put him in the bracket, of course. He shouldn't be anywhere near the bracket of the Newtons, the Lynettes, you know, the Villiers. But what he's showing us is the skill set he's got in terms of his ability to run good lines, to run fast, to run strong. And to be fair, he's getting some great service. Don't get me wrong. You know, he's running the line, but someone's feeding him. But Tanganoa, I mean, he's really becoming an important player for the Robins.
He is, yeah. And I think, you know, he's been a great sign. Yeah, he's been a great signing. You know, and you think, you know, I think there's some people had question marks over him before he came because of his injuries, except injuries he had last season, etc. But this season, you say, he just brought a different level to that whole side, that left hand side. Just makes it look so effortless. And like I said, just running some great lines, and you know, he scored like trial in the derby in round one. And as soon as he got that ball, there was no way anybody was going to stop him. And the sidestep to go around Moylan again, just I think it's quite deceptively fast as well for a big guy. He is I think he's very fast.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, James, though, the Robins, you know, and this is, I suppose, what we've already been talking about, that sucker punch where the Leopards opened us up for Hanley to go over for that try. I mean, you could see it happening if you were sitting in the East End, well, wherever you were sat, you could almost see the space unfolding for Hanley, yeah. And they went over. And I suppose they're the coach killers, aren't they, where the you know, Rovers get on the front foot, start to show a bit of dominance, and then there's a sucker punch from the Leopards, as good as they was. But I suppose they're the tries where we need to try and cut out, Hartley, because they're the ones that ultimately can come back and bite you.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that on the back of the Tyrone made disallowed try for Lytton being downtown? That was...
Yeah, I mean...
Shows how fine margins it is that between, you know, having that, you know, having a opening a six extra point lead to being just 2 points behind, 2 points ahead. And it was,
I don't know, what do you think about that downtown? Because there's no doubt Lytton was in the lee line. But if you watch the full track, the sequence of play, he didn't actually affect the play, did he?
No, he didn't. No, he didn't get involved at all. And I think, And I think, okay, you got to give credit to Kendall for spotting it and getting it to...
Oh, it's a great spot for him, because if he was in the stadium...
You wouldn't have seen it, yeah. But when you look at it again, it just does not get involved. It moves. Mikey Lewis goes past him anyway, leaves Lytton in the defensive line. Then they set it up for putting the kick through for May to score. And I think obviously in the ground when he went to the video ref, thought, oh, he's looking for Tyrone maybe onside, which, you know, when you look at the video, it was miles onside. But then when they went further back and disallowed it, it was just a bonkers decision. By the letter of the law, it was right. But then is that something about the law that needs to be amended to sort of say, well, if you're not interfering with play or not getting involved, you know,
it just seems carry on. A hard and fast rule where you think actually is a scope to have, I don't know, a little bit more scrutiny on in terms of whether the player became involved. Because also, as well, don't forget, you very rarely see Ryan Hall put a kick through. And his skill's not being credited there. So, it was a shame. But, you know, like we saw.
I mean, the irony was that if it was only spotted because May had scored the try. If they'd been tackled 5 yards from the Lee line, there would have been no penalty. Lee would have handed the ball over and they would have been in a worse position.
Yeah, it's a great point, and that's the scrutiny. I mean, although Lee went in, then we saw Niall Evels come in for a try, and what an important player he's been for the Robins, James, especially moving to fullback. I think, you know, I understand what Willie Peters was doing with Hiku and why he put him there, but you know, I love seeing Evels pop in on the right, on the left. As soon as you see him there, you just think
something's going to happen. You can see what Smith or Peters was doing before the season, but now he's got Hiku playing out of his skin in the centre when he clearly is a centre, and Evels, you know, playing out of his skin at full back, and I think probably just causing panic amongst opposition defenders every time he gets the ball, because he's just so quick, he's so elusive, because he's got the eye for that small gap that within a blink he's through and away. And then if you've got, you got Hikugu and you've got sort of Burgess following up, more often than not, it's going to end up in a try. If Everton score, it's going to get out to one of the other guys coming through.
We saw Minchella come up with the final try of the game. Some really big performances. But I suppose, James, one player who has gone under the radar for a long time and just consistently puts in performances week in, week out, Dean Headley. He gets more position. Sometimes I expect him to see him on the wing, centre, second row, prop. He's just someone who can do a job anywhere. But, it's testament to him, is it, that Woody Peters said that, I think when he became head coach, that one of the first players he spoke to was Dean Headley. Yeah. And Dean Headley told him how important he'd be to the side. For Dean as well, I think what's important for Dean Headley, James, is that he seems to have these little niggle injuries that he used to suffer from, where he'd be in and out. They seem to be getting less and less, and he seems to be getting a bigger run in the team. And as a result of that, his consistency in terms of his performance seems to be getting better and better. And he's a fantastic player for the Robins. I don't think he's ever someone who's going to get man of the match. No. But I'll tell you what, his performances lay the foundation, along with some of the players, lay the foundation for the Robins and some better players to go and do what they do.
No, I totally agree. He's come on to another level this season. And like you say, he's not one of those players who you instantly jumps out of the spotlight at you. But he's probably the sort of player that every club needs. You look at every club that was probably successful over the years, they've always had someone like a Dean Headley who just gets through, all the grind, all the grunts, does it in an efficient way, doesn't really get any glory, but when he's not there, you miss him. And I think, if you talk to all the other players in the squad, he's the sort of player who, they want him in that squad, and they want him in that team. And it's just this engine, he's got, he's got no qualms up playing 80 minutes. And you could see him do that week in, week out. He's one of the he's a top player.
To be fair, James, I think he could play 160 minutes. I think he'd play as
long as exactly. Exactly.
We've got Steve Brady from Catalan Media coming up very shortly to talk about, of course, the Robins playing the Dragons on Saturday. The semi-final draw, James, Wigan Warriors. We've been there before, haven't we? Of course, last season, that famous victory at Headingley. It's been announced that the Robins are going to be playing them at Doncaster. By all accounts, it's going to be an absolute Rovers fest, isn't it, in terms of ticket sales, and it's going to be probably akin to a home game for the Robins. And that said, the game's played on the pitch, not in the stands, isn't it? And Wigan Warriors have obviously shown themselves to be world champions and well deservedly as well. Yeah. So it's going to be a very difficult game. I mean, what did you make of the draw?
It was probably inevitable, really, wasn't it? I mean, if you look at the teams that are left, it was probably the hardest game team left in the competition. I think, we've obviously played Huddersfield this season and beaten them fairly comprehensively. We've played Warrington, lost to them, but should have beaten them. And I think, they've progressed, as we saw on Sunday against Saints. So, but, as we saw last year, we went into that semi-final last year, took the total underdogs. Nobody expected Rovers to put performance in or to even get close to Wigan. That day we scored 2-1. So, we can certainly do it. We've going that game with nothing to fear.
I was going to say, James, I think you've just probably hit the nail on the head there. We went into that semi-final last season with hope.
Yeah.
With maybe not expectation.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the previous year when we played Huddersfield, we'd gone there with the expectation we're going to win and just didn't turn up. Last year, I think we'd gone with the, if we put a good performance in, we'll get close. But they played out of the skin. And again, there's no reason why we shouldn't be feel as though confidently, you know, we're confident enough to go in there and beat Wigan. I think we showed last season that, you know, we beat them, obviously beat them in the semi-final, beat them at home. I think, you know, obviously discount the away Super League game. And I think in this the semi-final, you know, we just didn't really, we were still on the coach, weren't we, by the time they were 18-0 up. But no, I think, you know, we're going to be looking at Rovers and thinking, yeah, this is going to be a tough game. We've got to be on our A game to beat Rovers on in that semi-final. It's, you know, like I say, it's semi-final. Anything can happen. You know, the Doncaster Rovers with something like 15,000. You know, hopefully we're going to, it's going to get a full house, in which case it is going to be mostly Rovers fans. You know, and, you know, it's all covered, I think, believe. So that's going to sort of help with the atmosphere. Yeah, we can go there with confidence.
Yeah, definitely. And that, I mean, that's just over a month away, that game. Before that, Rovers have got a really tough run of fixtures, starting up with the Catalan Dragons on Saturday evening. People on social media, they may know Steve Brady from Catalan Media. I caught up with him early today to discuss the Robins game against Catalan Dragons on Saturday.
Steve, welcome to this week's Robin Pod Weekly. How's life in the south of France at the moment?
Yeah, pretty good, mate. Yeah, a bit of a hiccup last week for the Catalan Dragons against Huddersfield Giants. So that was a bit of fly in the ointment. But so far, so good this year. You know, the weather started picking up now. I know your supporters are looking forward to coming this Saturday into the sunshine. So, yeah, life is good. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, so, I think you reported they're expecting over 1,000 Robins down in the south of France for the game on Saturday. And most of them will be shortly on their phones now looking at the weather forecast. What can you predict for us, Steve?
Well, there's going to be sunshine. It'll be dry. It won't be wet. It's not as warm. Last week against Huddersfield, 30 degrees. You could see when the Giants arrived, the players on the pitch were thinking, gee, when I play in this. But funny enough, Catalan suffered more from the heat than Huddersfield. So this weekend, 22, 23 in Perpignan, but very strong sun. Bring the sunscreen. And just keep covered up a little bit on those shoulders, because it might be a shock to the system. Very strong sun this time of year. So be careful. Those robins will be very red on the way home.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, that's great advice, because as I look out my window now, I can see rain hitting the window panes. I can see the tree blowing. So I think they will be in for a bit of a shock, because the weather, I mean, British people and the weather, it's always something to talk about. But I tell you what, I know that we're getting sick of it. Anyway, plenty of sunshine, hopefully, and warm conditions in Perpignan on Saturday. What have you made to the Catalan Dragons' start to the season so far, Steve? I mean, they've only lost, two games this season. Of course, the most recent one, the Challenge Cup quarter-final defeat to Huddersfield. But they seem to have made a very strong start.
If you'd have asked me that question 7 days ago, and I said so far, so fantastically good. Played good teams. Beat top teams, looking good. Jordan Abdul was flying. You know a lot about that guy. And he was trying to get some kind of relationship forged with Theo Farge. And we got Nick Arima in the background. So we had like depth and strength. And we were flying, you know, not really getting massive wins, but getting the points and top of Super League, you know it. And then last week, the wheels came off. So all this time that Steve Max created this consistent performance from Catalan Dragons, just were hoping it's a bit of a blip last week, because I'm not sure many people expected that. Even Ian Watson in the post-match press conference told me that he expected it and the players expected it. I don't think so. Certainly not that scoreline. So I think the French supporters were stunned. The players afterwards, Steve Mack was stunned. We're in the press conference after the game and some French journalist was brave enough to ask him. He didn't know Steve very well. Do you think the players took the foot off the gas after beating Saints the previous week? And Steve wasn't happy about that at all. Not at all, no. He you know what Steve's like. He put him in his place and said, not at all. No. And I think that message will come through at training this week. You know, in fact, I know it's come through at training this week. It won't happen again, that. You know, you're a very, very good side, Hulk KR, and you're capable of doing that. And you've beaten us in the past with great performances, normally with Jordan Abdul in the side. But I think you'll see a Catalan Dragons that we've had in the opening rounds and not necessarily last week's Dragons. So, you will see a response. Steve won't allow a similar kind of 60%, 50% performance. It's not Steve's style. And I think now the cup's out the way. It's the old cliche, and they're going to focus on the league. But genuinely, you'll see a very strong and a very passionate Catalan Dragon side on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, they went so close last season, didn't they? They missed out on the League Leader Shield by points difference. And then, of course, that grand final, Wigan pipping them in the end. There's a bit of transition in the summer as well, weren't they, with quite a few players leaving and players coming in. What I mean, that new halfback partnership, of course, which is never easy to bed into a side. What did you make to the changes in the summer, in the pre-season?
He takes so many top players, and you know, the obvious one is Sam Tonkins. You take Sam Tonkins from any team, it's going to be a real loss. But then Adam Kieran, in the surprise package we uncovered from NRL, he was brilliant for us, a points machine last week. Last year, I think he is more of a loss than any of them. Tyrone May, of course, who was so creative for us. And I know Hulk, you love him to bits, and he's been fantastic for you. People keep saying he's playing in a dinner suit. I keep reading that every 5 minutes. And it's good to see. He's a good guy, Tyrone, and it looks like he's enjoying it under Willie Peters there. He's giving him that freedom which he needs, because he is an individual player who creates things off his own bat. And we lose Mitch Pearce too, and we lose Jackie Chan. And was it 7 players last year? So the transition, it's not so much a transition, it's a complete overhaul. And we got players in like Tariq Sims, Jaden Nikarima, and these guys, Bailey Sirenan, not necessarily superstars of the NRL. You know, Tariq's come towards the end of his season. Bailey Sirenan's got some mileage ahead of him. And I think Nikarima's come here with a real burning mission to prove himself back in the NRL, because he was a flyer until one or two issues put him off the running list. Then I think he'll be the one this weekend to look out for, because he's under the radar a little bit. We all talk about Jordan Abdul and Teo Farge. I think Jaden's due a big game. He had a match against Huddersfield last week, which, like all the rest of the players, you can forget about. But I think he'll be putting that right on Saturday. I think keep your eye on Jaden Nikarima. And keep your eye on Tariq Sims, because I've heard he's going to do a job, a George Williams type of tackle on Mikey Lewis, if he can get hold of him. So that's something to look forward to.
I was going to say that's the big if, because at the moment Mikey Lewis is running red hot, so you know, being able to lay a glove on him is easier said than done at the moment. I mean, out of all of that business there, it's Jordan Abdul probably the one who grabbed most attention on a season-long loan deal, with Catalan having the option to effectively buy him out of his contract and make the deal permanent. What have you made of him down in the south of France and how he's performed so far this season?
Well, instantly got sunburned, because he's a blonde lad. As soon as he got here, he went bright red. Nice guy. I think he's come here to find a little redemption and get out of the fishbowl of Hull and rejuvenate his career. Because we all know, I don't need to tell you how gifted he is with his skills. It's just been the injuries and the problems he's got back home. We all hope, and I think he certainly seems happy here, that he could rejuvenate his career. And we can all see that the skills that he's obviously capable of. Of course, he's picked up the hamstring now, you know, the other week against St. Helens. I was the 7th minute of the game, you know, and I was on the touchline doing a bit of TV reporting, and he was absolutely mortified. He's thinking, not again, I'm injured again. He said, patch me up. And you know, an hamstring, you can't go back on. Yeah. They wrapped him up, and I said, are you going back on, Jordan? I hope so. But since then, he's torn a bicep muscle in the hamstring. So could be hopefully 4 weeks out. Maybe even 6. So we're gutted for him. I think he started like rabbits in the headlight. We didn't see the signing coming, but he's landed here and he looks content, as content as I've seen him play. And he's absolutely gutted that he can't be on the pitch this weekend.
Yeah, and people who are listening and watching to this will, you know, it's sort of same old story. You know, we hate to say it. You know, a player who's supremely talented. You know, couldn't win a game his own, and whatever reason, pick seasons, and the fact we've got into April, you know, most Rovers fans won't want to say it, but it's almost like told you so, and it's such a shame. Wow. Because we want to see him out on the pitch, you know, we want to see him thriving, and I mean, thankfully for Rovers on Saturday, he won't be playing, because obviously he'll have come out with maybe a big point to prove, a game that I'd have been looking forward to. I suppose, Steve, this is a bit of a daft question, but what is it about the lifestyle down in Catalan that attracts players to go down? And, you know, in Jordan's case, it maybe was seeking redemption, getting out the goldfish bowl of Hull and for the Aussies who go over and the New Zealanders, it's a bit of the sunshine and maybe the laid back lifestyle. What do you think it is about the lifestyle down there that attracts so many players, good and good quality players as well?
Yeah, again, it's another cliche. It's the sunshine, it's the culture, it's the south of France, it's the beaches, it's the mountains, the skiing, you know, all of that. Yeah, we all know that. But I think the thing that surprised us, and we moved out here 7 years ago, we didn't realise the depth of rugby league culture over here, the small amateur clubs, and the real passionate fervour that people in this region, it's called Roussillon, this little triangle where Perpignan is the major city. And there's so many fantastic clubs, Trezis, they call it over here, Game of 13. And the passion that they have, if you're a rugby league professional and you're brought up in Hull or Wigan or Warrington, I don't think you're fully aware, when you come here, how much love they have for rugby league. And I think that is the big surprise. As I say, not every player takes it. Usually it's family reasons. If they've got young kids and they're missing family, or the wives want to go back home. And we all understand that. That's totally natural. But if you love the good things of life, like the real good culture and weather, and it's beautiful here. And it's got this massive bonus of a depth of passion for rugby league. And don't forget, over here, rugby union's king. Rugby union is God here. Football first, and closely followed by rugby union. And they're not real big fans of rugby league in France. We do get slapped down quite a lot. But this region, this Perpignan region, Toulouse, and all the Carcassonne and Lesignan, it's a hotbed of rugby league. So if you're a professional rugby league player, you think, oh, I'll go and have a couple of years in the sunshine at Catalan Dragons. Like Sam Tompkins, he didn't think he'd stay here. He's bought a house. He's bought a vineyard. He's living here. That's him forever now. Because there's something much more than just nice beaches and sunshine. They love rugby league. It's not a posh area, this. It's proper down-to-earth, humble people, grafters, like us. I'm from Wigan originally, like you guys in Hull. Normal, decent rugby league folk. And that, I think, is the thing that keeps people here. You'll come for a couple of years. Yeah, that's the thing for me.
And with Stevie Mack there as well, it's not a holiday, is it? You know, you might have a sunshine, but the players out there on holiday, you know, he's been able to get a fine tune out of them so far. And of course, like we've already mentioned, he's hoping to go that one step further. But when the players go there, you know, they're worked hard, aren't they?
I think, obviously, Steve's a taskmaster. When he was the England boss, you know, we were so close to becoming world champions and beating the Aussies. And then in the wisdom, the RFL got shut because of one game and got Wayne Bennett on three times the salary. Unbelievable. And went backwards after that. Steve Max is a ruthless professional. He's a tough guy to deal with. But he loves his players and he's got a real warm touch with them. So even though they know they have to do things, he's so protective and cocooning of them in every situation, the respect comes back. What he said is they don't train as much. He doesn't whip them at training, or Matt Parr, the strength and conditioning guy. They don't need to. They seem to have responded to the climate and the ability to run all year round in sunshine on dry pitches. Super fit, keep themselves fit. They've got their own training regimes at home. So and because of all the travelling they do, Steve says they do less training because they spend most of every second week in the waiting at airports, etc. So they can't flog them too much. So he is a taskmaster and he'll demand everything from a player, you know. But at the same time, it's the other way, the streets on the other way. He really looks after them. He's protective, and any criticism gets slapped down very quickly in the press box.
Yeah, I mean, Catalan, it's not a happy hunting ground for the Robins. We've only tasted victory four times since 2007. And you have to go back to the 31st of August 2019 for Rovers' last victory, a Danny Maguire-inspired win there. Like I said, it's not a happy hunting ground. The fact that we're coming up against a wounded Catalan side after that Challenge Cup defeat to Huddersfield makes that task a little bit harder, doesn't it? Because Stevie Mack will be drilling into them boys, you know, we need to right some wrongs here. And there's no better chance to it than on Saturday. And you know, if you defeat one of your rivals who are challenging for the playoff spots and that top three spot, you know, this is a great time to do it. So it's going to be an even harder encounter for the Robins on Saturday night.
I think so. Steve obviously is bristling from last week. I've already said that. And as a professional, his pride is wounded. He said he was humiliated. The club was humiliated. He felt it as a coach and embarrassed by that defeat. So you're going to see, it's going to be a really fierce contest for you. I didn't know those stats. I didn't know you hadn't won so many games over here for such a long time. I just remember every time Jordan Abdul comes here, maybe it was in London, just bombing us to death and Catalan's really under the cosh because of him, I suppose. But I didn't know those stats. I mean, certainly the way you're performing in the last 18 months, you know, two seasons, you've every chance. If Catalan's put anything like the performance against Huddersfield, you walk away with it on Saturday. I don't think Steve will allow that. It won't happen. It's going to be a cracking game. I think we all know that. And thank God it's live on Sky. Like last week's game, the Huddersfield game just dropped off a media black hole. Nobody could see it anywhere back. There's no radio coverage. But this is live and livid on Sky on Saturday. It's going to be an absolute belter. You play the kind of rugby league that suit Catalans. And I think expect points and expect big hits. And I think they're pretty disciplined sides at the moment. Bailey Siren has just got away with, was proven innocent of the charge, a grade E charge of a dangerous tackle. So he'll be playing. And Catalans have been pretty good at that. That round one where everybody got red cards, Mickey Mack got a four-match ban. Since then, we've been pretty squeaky, really, squeaky clean. You guys are not so bad on that front too. So a good, clean game, fast-flowing, in the sunshine, dry pitch, 1,000 OKR fans. It's got, you know, a real cracker written all over it.
Yeah. And this is a different Hull Kingston Rovers side that's travelling down to the south of France now. You know, Willie Peters has got, obviously it's his second season. He's brought some players in who've made a tremendous difference to this Robin side. And they've got, you know, it's something I keep saying on this Robin pod, they've got a steeliness about them. You know, they don't give away cheap points. They don't give away penalties. You know, it's amazing how few penalties they do concede during a game. So this is probably one of the most hotly anticipated games of the season so far. Of course, we're still only, what, 8 rounds into Super League. And, of course, you guys defeated St Helens in your last Super League game at home. So the public will be responding to this one. I know you've mentioned there's over 1,000 Hull Kingston Rovers fans expected, so the atmosphere is going to be great, and I'm guessing the Catalan public as well are responding in numbers to this game as well.
Yeah, it should be a decent crowd. Of course, it's not a huge stadium, you know, maximum 12,000, so it'll test that this weekend. A friend of mine called David Forty, he runs Catalan Sports Tours, and he's the guy who brings most of the package tourists over here, puts them up in Lorette, and he's got loads of coaches coming up on Saturday. He reckons there could be as many as 500 independent travellers maybe going through your club or independently. It's got to be a real party atmosphere, like I say, in the sunshine. The people of Perpignan, you know, they've been responding. We've had a couple of 10,000, 11,000 crowds so far this season. And when you think, technically, it's a rugby union city too. The local team, USAP, have been sold out 15,000 for the last 6 games because they're having a good run in rugby union. It's not a rich town. There's not a lot of money, but they spend the money on the Catalan Dragons. So expect, I'm looking 10,500, 11,500 this weekend. Cracking atmosphere. And the club always puts on the fireworks in the razzmatazz. There'll be no bulls on the pitch. there'll be something that'll go wrong or crazy because it's always a bit nuts down here. But it's good-natured and well-meant and very passionate. And so that's why people come, you know. People keep saying, why is 1,000 fans going this weekend? Yeah, it's a weekend away in the sunshine with a few beers around town. But it's the game. It's all around the game. Yeah. And the animation they put on, the music, the dancing, they really invest into the actual event. It's a bit like yourselves, Craven Street. You know, I look at the mirror image between us. Obviously, the weather's not the same, but you've played to your strength. Catalan's played to their strength with the sunshine and this weekend away. You've looked at the heritage and the love and the passion that you've got and then created some fun at one end of your ground, and it's taken off. And then look at your initiative with Papua New Guinea this week. You've got some creative, exciting people with good ideas at OKR. And I think that mirrors an awful lot of what's going on here at Catalan. So there's a lot of admiration for what you're doing there.
Yeah, and I suppose for both sides, Steve, the off-field stuff, you know, is good. It's important. It needs underlining with some silverware, doesn't it? And the Robins go into a tricky run of fixtures. We face, of course, the Dragons on Saturday, and then we take on the Wigan Warriors, St Helens, Warrington. So it's a period of games that are really not defined the season, but it'll probably lay down a real good marker for where the Robins are going to be probably come the end of the season. Starting with a victory on Saturday would be absolutely fantastic. We don't know the team news just yet in terms of the squads. Are you expecting many changes from the Huddersfield game on Saturday?
Not really. No injuries as such. I don't think anybody will be linked off. Maybe Mickey Mack could come back. He had an ankle injury from the previous round. So I think you might get Michael McAloran back in the side, which does make a difference. You know, he doesn't stand out in a game when you watch it from outside. But if you play alongside him, it makes a massive difference because he inspires that defence. I think he'll stiffen things up. Fingers crossed. We'll find out very soon what the squad and the team is. But yeah, Mickey Mack is probably the main change. You get the same spine, same mainly French spine. Cesar Ruiz will be on the sidelines just in case Nick Arima gets a crock. More or less the same team. But as for your run of fixtures, that'll be the big test for you. You just outlined the big games coming up, and you've got cup responsibilities too. That's my big question about OKR. You've got expectation this year after your improvements. You've never had expectation before, and the weight of expectation of winning games can really weigh on a team. This will be your test now, these next few games. If you can deal with expectation of your fans who've been turning out fantastically for you, if you crack that, you will get silverware. See, the mile off, the club's going in the right direction. You've just got to deal with that. All of a sudden, people believing in you. You're not used to that as a club. Wigan and Saints and Leeds, to a certain respect, have had that for years. Hull have suddenly got some expectation, and that can weigh heavily on your heads. How you respond to that, and I think Billy Peters is good for it. If you respond well to that, you'll go beyond that next level that you want to go beyond.
Yeah.
Good luck with it.
Yeah, and I think it's a good, great point that you make, and I do think that this side isn't fearing it. It's embracing it, and it's expecting it almost. It comes with the territory, and the players we've got in terms of their experience, you know, even Mikey Lewis, who was so young, it seems like an old head on young shoulders at the moment, the way he's playing. And I do think they're really embracing this pressure, and that's why I do think this game on Saturday it's going to be a cracking encounter, because I think you've got two sides for different reasons, ultimately, you know, chasing silverware. But this Saturday, I do think it's going to be top billing. And, you know, the fact it's, you know, prime time, Saturday tea time, there's going to be a big crowd. It's got all the billings. And this is the best of rugby league, isn't it? This is what you're selling to everybody else to say, come on, put your eyes on this game, because this is what Super League, rugby league is all about.
We had a little chat before we started recording this about marketing and maybe the lack of marketing at the head of the game. If you can't market this game this weekend, Mikey Lewis running around in the sunshine, hugging fans and winning Man of the Match awards, maybe. If you can't market this, it's going to be a wonderful spectacle of rugby league. We should be flogging this to bits, genuinely. Yeah. Where's the build-up? Where's the build-up from Super League? Where's all the chat and chatter? It should be on now. We should be pushing this now to get TV viewers. Sky doing their bit. They're covering every single game this season, and that's incredible. The RFL, Super League, and the marketing people, if there are any, they should be flogging this to death, because what happens on Saturday tea time here evening is going to be a very special thing, and as many people as possible should be introduced. If you can't be there, you should be watching this on TV, because it's going to be an epic sporting event full of fun and sunshine and fans enjoying themselves in a great atmosphere at a top stadium with two teams going at it 100%. Why can't we market that? They should be on it now. Should be having an interview with Mikey Lewis. Should be interviewing all the players at Catalan Dragons and pushing. Just don't see it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned marketing, because on the same day, the RFL announced where the Challenge Cup semi-finals would be taking place and on what day. They also announced a doubleheader, England-France international, the men's and women's side will be taking on France on the 29th of June in Toulouse. It actually serves as a triple header because, incredibly, Toulouse will be taking on Featherstone at the same venue on the same day. So it's a triple header. I mean, fantastic that England have got a test international to play, because we just still don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season, whether we're actually going to be taking on Samoa or not. And I think as well, it's in celebration. Is it 90 years of French rugby league as well?
It is, yeah. It's the 90th anniversary of the birth of rugby league in France. And there've been a few events announced, and this was one of it. And the French rugby league announced these fixtures in January, planned, and then the RFL didn't ratify it. I think we're still trying to work out some TV coverage, maybe the BBC or Sky. It looks like it won't be on either one of those, although it will be available on Super League Plus, which is, you know, depending on the price, is still good value to watch, particularly if it's three games. It just seems a bit silly, there's three games. Now, it's great value if you're a spectator and you're travelling to Toulouse. You're going to see three games, the men's and women's international. And then some people are saying they're the warm-up for a championship game against Featherstone.
I was going to say, Steve, it's great if you're a Featherstone fan and you was already planning on travelling over for the game. You've also copped two internationals as well.
Yeah, buy one, get two free. But at the end of the day, those French players who are playing for Toulouse won't be able to play for France, you know, because it's the, you're not going to play two games in the same day. So we keep complaining about France playing weakened sides, and then we play a game against England when half the sides are unavailable because they're going to play later on that day. It just seemed nuts to me, I must admit, and I don't know what part of the 90th celebrations that creates, but it's good. Look, it's great news. We announced it in January on Catalan Media. It took a while for the English game to ratify. I understand it. It's not always very easy like that. But like this end-of-season Samoa situation, nobody knows. It's nuts, isn't it? A phone call and yes or no, that's all we need to know, is it? It's you can't keep fans guessing like this because you've got to plan what you're going to be doing for the rest of the season. But for the double-header, triple-header game at Toulouse, yeah, get your cheap flights are available. I've seen them already. That's going to be a hell of a day in very hot conditions. The Stade Ernest Wallen, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I mean, it is a crazy situation, isn't it, with Toulouse, because they're either going to give up their French players or they're not. And if they don't, it does weaken that French side. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't expect this to be the strongest England side that'll be travelling over. I think it'll be an opportunity for Sean Wayne to have a look at some maybe fringe players who are on the periphery of the England setup. That said, you know, you want the French side to be the strongest it can be, and the planning and organisation around this, you know, it is beggar's belief, isn't it? How they can get themselves into a situation like this in the first place?
It's tricky. You know, you look at the RFL and they get some stick, and I know the guys at the RFL, they don't deliberately go out to make mistakes or make them look silly. They're trying their best. It's a difficult situation. They're dealing with the French Federation, which is even more chaotic at times. And again, they're all rugby league supporters, but it just doesn't click. It's not working as a professional organisation as smoothly as it should be. If you're trying to introduce more fans to watch the game, it's all a bit haphazard and made up on the back of a cig packet. It's not good enough. It's simply not good enough. They need to coordinate much better. For me, I don't think there's much communication between the English authorities and the French authorities. You know, they should have got together and discussed this before any announcement. You don't let the French leak it out and then hope for the best with the English. And then they wonder why people don't turn up. It seems like the authorities don't care too much about it. So why would you go and spend your hard-earned cash to watch a game that nobody seems to care about? Now, it's up to us in the media to market this now and sell it like it is. It is an international game between France and England. We all want international games to improve the standard between the nations, but it hasn't happened. You know, the clubs, Catalan Dragons and Toulouse, are not going to release French players when they're paying them a good wage to try and Toulouse to get into Super League and Catalans to win the title. It's something's got to give, and that lack of communication between RFL and the French Federation, I think, is the weak link that is stopping this international cooperation from growing any better than it should do, because it should be France v England should be the warm-up to improve both nations, but England in particular, for when they play the Kiwis in Australia. They want ferocious contests with the closest neighbours. And this is not communicated. It's just not clicking. It's frustrating.
Yeah, and Steve, lastly, I mean, I know there'll be a lot of seasoned Hull Kingston Rovers supporters travelling over to Perpignan, who have been there many times before. You've already mentioned a lot will be staying in Lorette. For anyone who's maybe travelling over for the first time, is there any spots that they should hit in Perpignan?
Traditionally, everybody gathers at the castle in the middle called Le Castellet. But the bar, the famous big bar that they all sing songs in, it's gone bust. They struggled after COVID. I know the owners, sadly, couldn't afford to keep going after COVID. He said the only thing keeping us going was the English supporters who were coming over from the rugby league teams. So the main body of fans now have moved along to the theatre side of Perpignan and a pub called Delirium, which is a brand new chain, a new branch of a chain called Delirium all over Europe from Belgium. It's a beer pub with a terrace. So they'll assemble probably at Delirium Bar and sing the songs probably about when they get there. The coaches come up from Lorette about kind of lunchtime, early afternoon, and all the independents are there all day. Full English breakfast, Sky Sports on tap. It's a proper home from home. But sun's shining. That's the place where the songs will be. They'll assemble at the Castellet. They'll be hitting the Café Vienne, which is a fantastic city centre restaurant, and hitting the municipal square there. It's just a great weekend.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes on at the ground as well, isn't there, Steve?
Yeah. It's they open 2 hours before the match at the ground, and there's music, and they put palm trees in now. It's like a tropical paradise. They've got live singers in every corner. You can pay now. Fans who've been before will be sick to death of the old plastic token system of buying chips and beer and stuff like that. Got rid of that now. You can still do it if you want to pay cash, but you can pay by card now. It makes life so much easier. And they reckon that every English fan that comes to Catalan Dragons spends on average 5 times more than the local French fan. They go in the boutique and buy a teddy bear and a scarf and then go and spend a fortune on Guinness and fish and chips. It's always an event. We love it to death when they come over here, especially numbers like that. I mean, what a turnout. You turned out all season for your team at home, and then to go and represent yourselves in such numbers this weekend, should be very proud of yourselves.
James, great insight into rugby league in the south of France. I tell you what, James, I was listening to that, I was looking at houses, flights, job opportunities, you know what I mean? I'll tell you what, I mean, it sounds idyllic, doesn't it? I mean, like I said, when I was speaking to Steve, I was looking out the window and it was bloody howling down with rain, the wind was blowing, and we're in bloody April. You know, it's crazy, yeah. Isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, James, we've got a terrible record, let's be honest, at Catalan, aren't we, down in Perpignan. Only 4 wins there since 2007. A victory on Saturday, though, will make people sit up and start believing and thinking, hey, this Rovers team could really be onto something, won't it?
I think it will. It's going to be probably the toughest game of the season so far, bar none. I think you're right. You know, so Catalan are going to be wounded after getting hammered by Huddersfield last week on the back of, you know, a fantastic performance against Saints. So, you know, they're going to come out fighting and to try and sort of right the wrong of last weekend. So it is going to be a very, very tough game. But as you say, you know, we've not got the greatest record there. I was fortunate enough to be there in 2019 when you know, say Maguire inspired victory that was hopefully going to keep us up. It was, and then till the week after we played London and made it on squeaky bum time again. But by the same token, would you a victory? You know, sometime these runs end. So yeah, it's 5 years since then. So why not? Why aren't we going to go and win there? We spoke earlier in the pod about, you know, that expectation and sort of not just going there with hope, going there with expectation. And Catalans will know they'll have to play their A game against Rovers. You know, we're going to go there with effectively full strength squad. You know, we're missing Jesse Sue, but we've got Sam Luckley's back, and then potentially George King has made a quicker than expected recovery. So you just sort of say, you know, we've got potential for two quality players to come in place of somebody who's suspended, you know, who's going to be suspended. So yeah, it's going to be tough. I think from our perspective, we're probably fortunate that Abdul's not playing, because, you know, he's been playing out of his skin all season, you know, and, you know, as Steve alluded to, he's probably having that break from the crooked pressure that is the City of Hull. That's sort of probably done him a lot of good. And it is, you know, unfortunate that he is injured. But by the same token, Rovers can't worry about that now. You know, he's normally our player, but he ain't going to be playing, so we'd have to worry about, you know, we're not worrying about him, but they have quality across the whole field as well. So we're still going to need to go there and, you know, play that 80-minute game that we were talking about earlier in the earlier on.
Yeah, and for me, James, I mean, when we've gone over to Catalan, the side's either been patched up, we've either been, mm-hmm. you know, down towards the bottom of the league, you know, there's always been, it's never been the best Hull Kingston Rovers side to go across there, has it? You know, apart from Jesse Sue, this is the strongest possible, mm-hmm. you know, as we record this now, you know, we don't know squad news, but Willie Peters already said that Oliver Gildart is in contention. Mm-hmm. George King's back earlier than he expected, and he should be. He should be in the side. Mm-hmm. Apart from Jesse and Sam Luckley's back after his suspension, like you've already said. This is the strongest, you know, apart from Jesse Sewell, the strongest side going over to Catalan that we've probably ever had going over in our Super League history. So. Mm-hmm. So I and this is what I was talking about, the mentality shift in terms of not expecting to win, but almost thinking we're going toe-to-toe on an equal level. Mm. That's what I expect. We're going toe-to-toe. And that's why I'm so excited for Saturday, because I think this is going to be a fabulous encounter, just like the Saints-Catalan game was.
Yeah, it will be, yeah, definitely.
And that's what I'm expecting.
Yeah, same here. I think, you know, he's got, you know, Willie Peters is going to have probably the sort of headache probably actually every other coach in Super League envies. Like, who is going to leave out? And like I say, if Gildart come back into contention, you then got a choice between Hiku, Gildart, and Opacic for two centre spots. You have to say Hiku's probably, you know, he cemented his place. Yeah. But I thought on Saturday, I think Opacic had his best game of the season. So, you know, you have to think, well, actually, yeah, if he then brings Gildart in and gain his quality instead of Opacic, he's not going to lose anything in the squad. But he's had to say, well, Opacic probably deserves to stay in that squad on what, you know, on what he did on Saturday. So, yeah, it is just, I couldn't now look at the team thinking about who's going to be playing there, because there's an argument for, you know, 19, 20 players who could fit into that 17-man squad on match day, and you know that where they currently are, they would put in a very, very strong performance and push Catalans to the maximum, and that's all you can ask for, really.
Yeah, yeah. One player who's not going to feature against Catalan is Lewis Senior, 2-week loan deal to Castleford. Probably not a surprise, is it, to see him going to Pasha's New, albeit on a short-term deal. I mean, don't forget as well with Lewis Senior, and I've seen him, you know, catch some flack. He's so young. He's still young.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Such a young player, and he's still got the raw talent. Mm. You know, he's got the pace. I think defensively, you know, there's a question there around his positioning and where he figured. But in terms of size and what he's got still left in the tank in terms of his age, he's probably someone I'd think is worth keeping around. But, you know, going to Castleford for a couple of weeks isn't a bad deal for him.
It's not. And I think, you know, he's going to be, you know, he's still getting that Super League experience. He's obviously going to be linking up with his twin Innes. So that's probably going to help him as well. But you're right. I think there is something about him. I think he does get a bit of unfair criticism. You know, we have seen glimpses of what he's capable of, you know. And hopefully, you know, it will help build his confidence. I suppose the question mark is around, well, you know, he's out of contract at the end of this year. So is it a question of Rovers giving him the opportunity to put himself in the shop window? You know, if the rumours of Tom Davies coming in for 2025 are true, you'd have to think, well, you know, Tom Davies is going to take one of those wing spots. If Joe Burgess then signs on, you're thinking, you know, Ryan Hall's probably going to, you know, potentially retiring if that's what's happening. So you think from a senior's perspective, would he want to potentially hang around as, you know, third or even fourth choice in that squad, where he probably is at the moment? And yeah, it's the right call for him to go out, I think, get a bit more experience, build that confidence, and hope this score a few trials while he's there.
Yeah, congratulations to the women's side. They picked up a 24 points to 16 victory over Dewsbury. Great to see them back to winning ways. And I suppose the final point of the podcast, James, should go to Phil Lowe and the ceremony that was at Bulkington Rovers. I mean, Scott Solway has been a regular on the Robin Pod. I sent him a little message to say what a fantastic job he did in terms of leading the ceremony, and it's such a tough job to do that. And I know Scott, you know, he led a heartfelt eulogy for Phil and what a player he was. So it's yeah, such a sad time for what happened there, but great to see the club recognising what Phil did, and great to see so many people in attendance.
Yeah.
That is service as well.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's obviously still, you know, sort of very, very sad news, but it was just, it was, you know, just great to see that, that stand packed for the service, and it just really shows how much, you know, I think the older sports like myself, you know, can remember Phil in his pomp and, you know, clattering defenders out of the way, and actually makes, you know, probably more of the younger fans realise, you know, the heritage that the club's got and the great players we've you know, we have had, you know, done, not just done the club proud, but done the city proud. And I think that's the big thing about Phil, you know, it was, you know, he was a whole lad, East Hull lad, and you know, he's gone there and he's, you know, he's gone, you know, played for the his local club, and he's basically won everything in the game, and you can't ask for anything, you know, that's, you know, sums the guy up, and yeah, he will be, yeah, his memory's going to live on.
Yeah, Scott, I know you like to listen to the Robin Pod when you're in the bath, so I tell you what, give no yourself sight. A little, yeah. I'll tell you what, tip a little bit more Radox in and enjoy that bath for a little bit longer, because Scott, you did a fantastic job. So huge heartfelt thank you from the Robin Pod for the job you did there. Right, that's it. That's the end of this week's Robin Pod Weekly, which is, of course, powered by Budget Size Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by the players, club officials and supporters of Hull Kingston Rovers. For now, live, love, laugh and be happy.